Without further ado, no questions from Oslo. It will be constructing final elements.
Yes, that's my job. I'm at the Center of Mathematics for Applications at University of Oslo, and this work grew out of a collaboration with Anna-Lisa Goffa. So I'm interested in constructing finite element spaces on composite meshes that can arise for efficient simulation of wave equations. So typically we have in 2D, for instance, a domain in which we have several types of cells. We perhaps want to use a finite difference scheme for most of the domain. So having a division of the space into cubes. Close to the boundary, we perhaps prefer triangles or tetrahedra in three dimensions. And in three dimensions, we will need also pyramids to join the parts of the domain where we have cubes and the parts where we have tetrahedra. So we might have several sizes of cubes, and if we have two different sizes of cubes like here, we see that the cube actually gives rise to a pentagon. And therefore we should allow for pentagons also in our treatment of space. Another way in which meshes with the different types of cells enter is through the dual mesh. So if you start with one mesh and you construct a dual mesh, then this one need not be made out of canonical shapes. In particular, this is the case if we start with a tetrahedra, the dual mesh consists of rather wild polygons or polyhedra.
Question there, you have one side, you had one element and it's straight on the face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here?
Yes. Is that allowed?
Yeah, so in a standard finite element theory, this is not allowed if you treat this as a square, but I treat it as a pentagon, and then I can allow for these so-called hanging nodes. So that was my introduction. The construction I'll show depends on some tools from differential geometry, which I'll introduce. I'll also speak about cells and co-chains constructed on cells, and the special type of differential form called Whitney forms, which are defined on simplicial complexes. Then I'll treat the non-simplicial grids that I just showed in the last part of my talk, and I'll construct both primal spaces and dual spaces. So differential forms, I'll denote by omega k the space of k forms. So a k form on the manifold is an object which for each point associates a k linear map into R, which is antilinear. And k forms correspond to scalar fields and vector fields when we have a certain Riemannian metric. So I'll denote by G a Riemannian metric and omega the associated volume form, which is the determinant in an orthonormal oriented basis. And then scalar fields and vector fields correspond to K forms in the following way. So with a scalar field, I just associate the scalar itself. Given a vector field, I can construct two different forms, namely the one form, which is the contraction of the Riemannian metric by U, and also the contraction of the volume form by U, which is a two form. And finally, from a scalar field, I can also associate U times the volume form, which gives me an element of omega 3. And then we have a commuting diagram relating these in the standard spaces of the scalar and vector fields, 2K forms, where we have the standard gradient, curl, and divergence, and on the line here, the exterior derivative. So the good thing about differential forms is that to define the gradient, the curl, and the divergence, you need the Riemannian metric on the manifold, whereas to define the exterior derivative down here, you don't need any metric information. So the other ingredient, so the discrete, in the discrete setting, is that of cellular complexes. So I do not buy a cellular complex, and in this cellular complex I will distinguish vertices. And I denote by T0 the set of vertices. And we also have edges connecting the vertices, and I denote by T1 the set of edges. And then we have polygons whose boundaries are the preceding edges. I denote by T2 the set of polygons, and more generally I denote by TK the set of cells which are k-dimensional.
Are we imposing orientation on the complex?
Yes. Orientation comes here. First I define a K cochain, which is simply a map from the set of k-dimensional cells into R. So I assign a certain real number to each k-dimensional cell. I call this a K cochain. And I denote by CK the vector space the K cochains form. And I suppose that each cell is oriented. And given an orientation of each cell, we can define the relative orientation of two cells in the following way. So if T is a cell and T prime is a cell on the boundary of T, which has dimension 1 less than T, I denote by epsilon T prime equals to 1 if the outer orientation of T prime induced by T is equal to the orientation of T prime, and I set it equal to minus 1 if it's the opposite orientation, and also I define this this number epsilon T prime to be 0 in all other cases. So given this assignment of relative orientations to the couples of cells, we can define the co-boundary operator, which is a map from k cochains to k plus 1 cochains, and it's defined by this formula here. So basically the value of the co-boundary of U on a t-dimensional cell is the sum of the values of U on the boundary cells multiplied by the relative orientations. So it turns out that the sequence of spaces CK is a complex in the sense that if I apply the co-boundary operator first once and then the second time, then I obtain 0. You see this mimics the property we have of differential forms. And that essentially the curl of a gradient is 0 and the divergence of a curl is 0. And linking the space, the sequence of K form, the space of K forms and the spaces of co-boundaries, we have a map called the Dirac map, which is a map from K-forms to K-cochains, which is simply given K-form U to integrate this K-form on all K-dimensional cells. And this gives me a certain assignment of numbers to the K-dimensional cells, which is a K-form. And now from Stokes' theorem, it turns out that the following diagram commutes, meaning that if I start with the k minus 1 form and take the exterior derivative and then the Dirac map, or if I take first the raw map and then the co-boundary operator, I end up with the same things. And if I can get this right, what we do on the k-dimensional cell, here is we integrate. We have integrated a k-form on this cell. And this k-form is the exterior derivative of something, so the integral of the exterior derivative on the case on the k-dimensional cell is what you have on the upper upper part here. On the lower part, we sum the contributions from the boundary, and these contributions were the integral of the differential form on the boundary. So Stokes' theorem says that these two things are the same. Now, if we have two complexes like that here, connected by maps which commute with the exterior derivative and the co-boundary operator, then we actually get the map from the cohomology group attached to this this space here, and the cohomology group attached to this space here. So the cohomology group is the kernel of the D operator here by the range of the D operator here. And such a commuting diagram provides a map from the cohomology group here to this one. And it turns out, and this is a deep theorem by Durand, that these induced maps between cohomology groups are isomorphisms. So this is of importance in simulations. Typically, we'll construct finite element spaces mimicking differential forms by making them isomorphic to spaces of co-chains, and then we know that the cohomology properties of our discrete spaces correspond to the cohomology properties of our continuous spaces. I'll get back to this. So a simplicial complex is a special cellular complex where each cell is a simplex. Now K-simplex is the convex on the log of K plus 1 points, which are not in a k minus one dimensional affine space. And on simplicial complexes, there's a nice construction of spaces of differential forms, finite dimensional spaces of differential forms, due to Whitney. And it goes as follows. First, we define barycentric coordinates for each vertex I of our simplicial complex. So lambda I is the unique piecewise affine function, which is equal to 1 at vertex I and equal to 0 at all other vertices. Then we construct k forms, and the way we do this is to attach to each, say, k-dimensional simplex, we attach the following k-form, defined by this formula here, where you see the exterior derivative of the barycentric coordinate functions of the vertices of the simplex appeared here, and you sum a certain linear combination of them. So this gives a K form attached to each K simplex, and we denote by omega by WK the span of this family. So it turns out that the exterior derivative maps a linear combination of such forms into a linear combination of such K plus one forms. And also, the integral of this k-form here, the integral of lambda t on the k-dimensional cell t is 1, and it's equal to 0 on all other k-dimensional cells. So it follows that the Durand map from this space of Whitney forms into the space of k co-chains is an isomorphism. And then we had the commuting diagram linking the space of the yeah, the spaces of differential forms with the spaces of co-chains, and now we can just replace the co-chains by these Whitney forms, and we obtain a diagram linking the K forms to the discrete K forms. And what we would like is to do the same thing for cellular complexes. So we want, given a cellular complex T, to construct spaces XK of K forms such that the Dirac map from the space of K forms into the space of K cochains is an isomorphism. And we also want the exterior derivative to map XK into XK plus 1. If we can achieve this, we obtain a commuting diagram linking the K forms, these spaces of all K forms, to these finite dimensional spaces of K forms with the property that we have an isomorphism in cohomology. So the way we're going to do this is to fix a simplicial refinement T tilde of T, and we'll construct XK as a subspace of the space of Whitney forms on the refinement. So here's a particular way of refining a cellular complex called the barycentric refinement. So I started with this division into different cells here, which the initial division is done with the thick lines. And we add all the barycenters of all the cells, and we call this this is the set of vertices of the new of the simplicial complex we're constructing, and we divide each cell into these simplices in this way. So we take simplexes of the form barycenter of T0, barycenter of with vertices barycenter of T0, barycenter of T1, etc. up to Tk, where each Ti is in the initial cellular complex, and the cell Ti is in the boundary of Ti plus 1. So the construction of the space Xk, which I introduce, is the following one. We take, we define by Wk of T the space of Whitney forms on the refinement, and I define by Wk of T partial T, I define this to be the subspace with zero boundary conditions, so the pullback of the differential form to the boundary should be zero. And I'm going to construct the basis of Xk, and I want this basis to be indexed by the set of K cells. So I pick now a K cell T, and I'll construct the basis function attached to this T. So the first step is the following one. I use the fact that if I take the sequence Wk minus 1 T with zero boundary conditions, I map with the exterior derivative into Wk of T, and then I map into R by the integral. I can integrate the K form on the K dimensional cell. So it turns out that this sequence here is an exact sequence, and therefore it follows that there is a unique element of Wk of T which has integral 1 and which is L2 orthogonal to all the exterior derivatives of elements of Wk minus 1 T partial T. And I define mu T on T to be this unique differential form, and I put it equal to zero on all the other k-dimensional cells. The second step of the construction is to extend the differential form step by step into higher dimensional cells. And for this, I will use the following property. So I suppose I have constructed mu t on cells up to dimension k prime, and I'll construct mu t on t prime of dimension k prime plus 1. And for this, I use the fact that now the sequence mapping wk minus 1 into wk with its exterior derivative and boundary conditions, and doing the same thing here with the exterior derivative and having boundary conditions here. This is an exact sequence. And from this it follows that there is a unique harmonic extension from the boundary to the interior of t prime. So that means discretely harmonic in the sense that mu t is L2 orthogonal to the range of the exterior derivative on this map, and d mu t is L2 orthogonal to the exterior derivatives of elements of this space. And it turns out that with this construction, all properties are satisfied. Namely, if I define xk to be the span of the functions of the k-forms mu t, then the Durand map is an isomorphism from xk into ck, and also the exterior derivative maps xk into xk plus 1. So that was the construction of primal spaces, or given a cellular complex, construct spaces of k forms which are isomorphic to the cochain complex. Now, given a cellular complex, we might also want to mimic the Hochstar operator. So the Hochstar operator is a map from k forms to n minus k forms, defined by the property that U wedge Hochstar V is equal to the scalar product of U and V with respect to the Riemann metric multiplied by the volume form of the Riemann metric. So if we just have a cellular complex, we can't construct the Hochstar operator from xk into xn minus k, we won't get an isomorphism simply because these spaces have a different dimension. So the solution to this is to introduce a dual mesh. So I started with a cellular complex with the thick lines here, and I constructed the barycentric refinement of this cellular complex. And now I can reassemble the simplexes of the barycentric refinement in another way, where I get, for instance, I get a two cell here attached to this zero cell of the primal mesh. So I get a two cell of my dual mesh as attached to zero cells of my primal mesh. And now I can construct xk. I let xk be the spaces I've just constructed on the primal mesh, and I denote by yk the spaces on the dual mesh. And now I have at least the property that the dimension of xk is equal to the dimension of yn minus k, and therefore the following bilinear form on the product xk times yn minus k might be invertible. So I take an element of xk and an element of yk, I wedge them and then I integrate them, and I have reason to believe that this bilinear form is non-degenerate. I haven't proved this except for the case of big N equal to 2. Anyway, if we suppose that this bilinear form here is invertible, then we can define a discrete Hochstar operator from xk into yn minus k by imposing that for all u the integral of u wedged with a Hausdorff star discrete v is equal to the integral of the scalar product of u and v in the Riemann metric times the volume form. And in the continuous setting, one can express the adjoint of the exterior derivative in terms of the Hochstar operator and the standard exterior derivative, and we have something similar happening for this discrete case here. Namely, if we take the adjoint of the exterior derivative as a map from xk to xk plus 1, then this adjoint is related to the exterior derivative on the spaces yk by the following commuting diagram.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can I prove that this U star operation has an inverse? Because usually the Hausdorff star is, when you apply it twice, it's up to a sign, it's the identity.
Yes. So now, if I can prove that this bilinear form here is non-degenerate, then I can prove that the discrete Hausdorff operator is an isomorphism. And I've not proved this for any n, but for n equals 2, it is proved. And this was all I wanted to say. There's some connections here to the literature. There are several branches of numerical analysis coming together around this. There are more and more expressed in terms of cochains and commuting diagrams, etc. So finite element work on this subject. I mentioned in particular Doug Arnold, Posadit, Nebelek, Kipmeier, Dankovic, and Bochev. The way these incidence matrices appear is similar to finite differences on general polyhedra, where we work with ZU. Yeah, my metric finite difference is, and this is also connected with lattice electromagnetics, so the standard finite difference scheme of Y, in particular, and also I mentioned work by Marston and Leok. This is all I wanted to say. Thank you for your attention.
Well, questions? Yes, please.
If I got it right, you start with any dimension, yes. To say you take any domain and then you put finite elements on it, and then you consider the graph formed by these elements, and it makes sense then to pass through all the dimension of the cells defined by the filled-in things. You start with the edges, vertices, edges, polygons, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you pass to the dual meshes, then you can have a dimension problem, because the dual is defined simply on the graph level. And it can happen that the same dimension k does no longer correspond to the dimension of the dual meshes. How do you solve this problem? Or do you only work in dimensions 0, 1, and 2? If I got it right, you had complexes with all overall dimensions.
I have overall dimensions, yes.
Okay. Then you have a problem with the dual dimension. Because, you see, the graph is always realizable in R3. The graph, in a certain sense, doesn't see what you fill in. Starting from your domain, yeah, for instance, there. Of course, there, it makes sense going up. But when you pass to the dual graph, it is not clear why the dimensions of the corresponding cells are pertained. Because the graph cannot see the dimension.
So you're saying that
Yes, I didn't
if
get
I, if I start with a cellular complex and I have
in fact, that's what I want. The point is, what do you precisely understand by the dual meshes? As your picture suggested, that it would just be what we in combinatorial theory understand by a dual mesh. And I doubt that this is true, because there must be a topological definition of the dual mesh. Then you can...
You're saying that this construction is limited to two dimensions?
What do you understand exactly by a dual mesh?
So I start with a cellular complex, and then I can do the barycentric refinement.
Okay.
And then if I now take a node of my original cellular complex, and I take all the simplices which have this as a vertex.
Okay.
Then when I assemble these, this gives me a cell. And my assertion is that this is a cellular complex.
This you should say, because
it is not a graph.
Yeah, because if you just take the dual graph, it will always remain in three dimensions.
Yeah.
In a certain sense, you will never see the filled-in dimensions for higher-dimensional objects.
Okay.
It is essentially a geometric realization.
Yeah.
Topological. One question, I guess, sort of something that crossed my mind on this connection to the dual mesh and the mesh, because there is another place, and this might be, by the way, the connection via the work of Jerry Marsden and Matthew Dirk. No. There is another place where the sort of duality between mesh and dual mesh is very important, and that's working on symplectic manifolds. Right? Electricity or leap or some forms,
okay.
Things like that. Because then actually it makes sense very often, since you have variables and dual variables, like position and momentum, it makes sometimes sense, like in multi-symplectic methods, to discretize one set of variables on one mesh and the dual set of variables on the dual mesh.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is whether there's a connection.
I'm not aware of any connection there, but I can perhaps say a word on why I came to this problem, which was that so for preconditioning certain integral operators, I have the spaces H div on a triangulation of a manifold, and the dual of H div is an H rot space, and it turns out that if you there's a standard construction of H div finite elements on this manifold, which is the Ravier-Kamar spaces, and if I rotate Ravier-Kamar vector fields by 90 degrees, I get a space of H-rot confirming vector fields. And in the continuous setting, H minus 1/2 div and H minus 1/2 rot are dual to each other, but it turned out that in the discrete setting this was not the case. And that's why we constructed an H-rot space on the dual mesh instead. And then it turned out that the duality would hold. If this is also useful for symplectic things, then I'm very happy.
I think that there is sort of similar logic. Sometimes similar logic actually is not terribly useful. But there is a sort of similar logic, like say in Priceman method.
Mm-hmm.
Is again a finite difference method, where sort of you have two meshes embedded one into the other.
Yes.
And you discretize some variables, essentially, say, position on one set, one mesh, and momentum on the other mesh.
Yeah.
And this allows you to have a multi-symplectic method.
Mm. Also, for the Yee scheme, the one has electric field attached to the edges of the tessellation of the space into cubes, and the magnetic field should be attached to the faces of the cubes, and the faces of the cubes are the edges of the dual mesh. So in this case, there's a well-known construction of dual spaces, and in some sense, I'm interested in generalizing this to non-cubical divisions of space.
Right. If there are no further questions, thank you again.